You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, the Kid Counselor. This is the Play Therapy Podcast, where you get a masterclass in child-centered play therapy and practical support and application for your work with children and their families. In today's episode, I'm answering several questions from Sarah in Florida. Hello to my fellow Floridian. How exciting. And Sarah is in a school 4 days a week. So she is the in-school therapist for a therapeutic unit in the district. So a really interesting role and really interesting dynamic. So she has been given toys and a playroom. She's very grateful for that. I would be too. And this is specifically with children who are having difficulty self-regulating and managing themselves in the classroom. So then she gets to see them for services and with the goal of integrating them back into regular classrooms. So really interesting dynamic. And Sarah, thanks so much for reaching out. And she actually wrote in with four questions. So this is like a mini lightning round, all from the same listener, but all of these questions are so helpful. So I actually think that if we dive into these one at a time, it really will be beneficial. So let me read a little bit of the email and then the specific questions, and then we'll dive in. I'm reaching out to you for the first time. I stumbled on your podcast a few months back and they've been life-changing. I've been trying to devour and listen to all of them as fast as I can. I have a couple of questions for you. So glad you found us, Sarah. All right, so the first question, since I am not yet a licensed therapist and I do not have an RPTS, meaning supervisor for RPT, can I still do play therapy and it be effective? I'm trying to devour your podcast courses and practice best I can so I can make a difference in therapy with my kids. All right. So I'll give you the simplest, easiest answer. Yes. Now I'll go into more detail. So I actually get this question a lot. So I'm chuckling, not because, you know, it's a silly question, just because I think so many people have this in the back of their mind that if you don't have some kind of credential associated with being a play therapist, that you can't call yourself a play therapist, which is baloney. So here's what you need to know, all of you. It does not matter whether you are licensed or unlicensed. It does not matter whether you are RPT or not. It does not matter if you are CCPT certified in any way. Play therapist is the type of therapist that you are. It's no different than saying you are an occupational therapist. You are a physical therapist. You are a speech therapist. You are whatever. Any type of therapy, there's a name associated with it to differentiate, right? So being a play therapist means you are a therapist that provides play therapy. There is no proprietary nature of the term play therapy. You do not have to be licensed, certified, registered, none of that to say you are a play therapist. As a related aside, it is often helpful to say that you are a children's counselor and then say, and play therapist. Because many people do not understand what a play therapist is. But if they see children's counselor and play therapist in your description, they understand that play therapy is somehow related to counseling children. So we have found that if you double those together, it is a little bit more easy for the general population to understand. However, you can say that you are a play therapist just because you practice play therapy. The second part of your question, is it effective? Yes. Regardless of your credentials, regardless of your license, if you are using the child-centered model to the best of your ability, you are adhering to it to the best of your ability, and you are continuing to build your skills to the best of your ability, it is effective. And here's why. Because it's about the relationship. Do skills matter? Of course. Do you need to be sound clinically? Yes. Should you never stop learning and never stop growing as a CCPT? Of course not. However, if you focus on the relationship, that is why CCPT works, because everything flows out of the relationship. So even if you don't feel, Sarah, that your skills are maybe as elevated as you would like them to be and that you're working to get them at some point someday, if your focus is to adhere to CCPT and to make sure that the relationship is paramount, CCPT will be effective across the board. So I hope that that encourages every single one of you that may not be certified, registered, licensed, whatever. You are a play therapist if you provide play therapy, and it works if you let the relationship lead the way. Okay, question number two. Do you ever explicitly teach self-regulation, breathing, for example, or mindfulness techniques for children at all in CCPT? Simple, short answer, never. More detailed answer to come. There's a little bit more to the question. This is something I explicitly teach my older kids and teens that I worry kids may not inherently learn without explicit instruction. Okay, so I'm not sure, Sarah, what you mean by, quote, older kids, teens. I'm hoping you're saying 14 and up. If you're saying, let's say, 11 and up, you need to be doing CCPT until 14. 3 to 14 is the window for CCPT. And do we ever explicitly teach self-regulation, breathing, for example, or mindfulness techniques at all? No. That's directive. It is not child-centered. And it is agenda driven. We're trying to coach them, train them, teach them, instruct them. That flies in the face of CCPT. What will happen, however, is children will naturally learn to self-regulate. And it might not be through breathing. It might not be through mindfulness. In fact, it won't be, because those are cognitive approaches and kids aren't cognitive or rational. So are they going to go, I need to take some deep breaths right now? No. But what they will do is develop coping. They will develop an emotional vocabulary that helps them communicate differently. They will develop the capacity to regulate when they get upheaved. They will understand what it means to have other orientation and worldview so that they don't just impulsively act out of their emotions. One of the universal outcomes is increased regulation. So we know that CCPT creates increased regulation in children, but it has nothing to do with us teaching it to them. They figure it out for themselves. So we never, ever, ever go that route with CCPT, and certainly not with kids under 14. Now, older teenagers, so 15 and up, they do have abstract reasoning. They do have rational thought. They are able to process things more cognitively. So with older teens, techniques like that might be helpful. But in truth, unless I have a child that starts with me under 14 and then continues with me after 14, and interestingly enough, I have like 3 seniors in high school right now, which is crazy because they drive themselves to the office and we sit and talk for an hour, and it's just crazy. But I started with them when they were 11, 12, 13. So I do not work with older teens unless they continue with me all the way through their high school years. But if you are seeing older teens in the school system, then that would potentially be an option for those types of kids. But 14 and under, exclusively CCPT, and no agenda-driven curriculum or directives. Okay, question number 3. Will CCPT make a difference for kids who are currently in trauma? For example, I had several this year in foster care, and they transitioned to different foster homes, were abused, etc., or whose parents are not engaged, a consistent problem with a home situation not changing. Okay, this is probably another one of my most frequently asked questions from therapists all over the world. So the short answer is yes, it will make a difference. What we know about situations that kids are facing at any given time is that even when the circumstances don't change, even when the environments remain static, even when the caregivers do not engage, even when they are consistently in a chaotic or traumatic or difficult environment, they are building resilience, they are building coping, they are building a sense of self, they are building problem-solving skills, they are building regulation, they are expanding in their emotional vocabulary. On and on and on. So what we believe in and what we celebrate is that even in the midst of dysfunction and chaos and turmoil and all of these things, that kids are still learning how to better handle being in that situation. I mean, look, if we could wave a magic wand and take every circumstantial or environmental stressor out of kids' lives while they're in play therapy with us, wouldn't that be amazing? I mean, I would love to rescue kids from the craziness of their situation sometimes. But what we know and what we have evidence that proves that it works is that even in the midst of all of that, kids are building the capacity to better handle, better adjust, and better process what's going on. Because a dysfunctional environment is only as difficult for the child as their coping skills. The more they know they can handle things, the more they trust themselves, the more they accept their circumstances, the more they believe in their own problem-solving capabilities, all of a sudden, that environment doesn't seem so overwhelming anymore. The greater their emotional IQ and their emotional vocabulary, it doesn't seem so difficult to handle anymore because they're better regulated emotionally. So we know that even when things don't change, CCPT is still helpful and it is still effective. So we never try to change the circumstances or the environment. We provide the opportunity for the child to change within those environmental circumstances, and they will. All right, and then last and final question. What do you do for kids who want to destroy your room every time? Oh, the million-dollar question. How do I set limits? I had one six-year-old child this year who was throwing and trying to break everything, spitting in the sand, putting everything in his mouth, etc. The playroom in itself was triggering, it seemed, and I had to finally take him to an empty room with only a few toys. Would you suggest that, or what recommendations for kids like that with intense anger and aggression all the time? All right. So, gosh, there's a lot to unpack there, Sarah, so I'll try to hit these in some semblance of an order that makes sense. Okay, number one, a child will never want to destroy your room every time. So even if you see a pattern of that, even if the destruction is repetitive, even if the aggression is pretty consistent, it will be a temporary, short-lived scenario. No child is destructive and aggressive every session throughout the entirety of treatment. Might they be in it for a stretch? Yes, but it will never be every time. So I think maybe with this particular child, it was just seemingly that way, but over time it will reduce. So we have to be mindful that every situation with a child in a playroom is temporary. Okay, how do you set limits? I'll get to that in just a second. So the child was throwing, breaking things, spitting, putting everything in his mouth. Okay, those were all isolated behaviors, and not particularly all of them were destructive. He wasn't trying to destroy everything when he was spitting in the sand. He wasn't trying to destroy everything when he was putting things in his mouth. Is it all dysregulated behavior? Absolutely. But isolated behaviors that require separate limits. So you would set a limit on throwing things if that was necessary. So remember, we have three unwritten rules about limits, and then we have three questions we ask ourselves. And you all should know that by now. So if you don't, go back and listen to earlier episodes. So when we go through the three unwritten rules and the three questions, if it was necessary to set a limit for throwing toys, then you would set a limit on that. Breaking toys would be another limit that was required. Spitting in the sand would be another limit. And putting things in his mouth would be another limit. You would need to see these as isolated behaviors because it's easy to go, oh my gosh, this kid is just doing absolutely everything he possibly can do to make this session crazy. Okay, yes, in the grand scheme, but every incident is its own isolated scenario in the playroom. So we always want to make sure that each behavior that requires a limit gets its own limit, and we don't string them together and we don't associate one with the other. Okay, then your next comment is the playroom seemed triggering to the child. I'm actually going to politely disagree. I think the child was really, really struggling, and the playroom and the relationship and the permissiveness and the safety and all of the things that a playroom affords a child, that made it very, very difficult for the child to control himself. I don't think the playroom was triggering. I think the playroom provided an environment that he never finds himself in, which is one where there's high levels of permissiveness, high levels of freedom, high levels of autonomy, no expectations, no judgment, no consequences, and he's never practiced self-regulation before. He has no idea what it looks like. So when you have a child that is in that situation and feels very uncomfortable, very out of sorts, and doesn't have the capacity to self-regulate at this point, everything's going to go haywire. So you mentioned, would I suggest that you take him to an empty room with only a few toys? No. The playroom is the playroom, and your therapeutic hour is spent in the playroom. You can't earn it. You can't lose it. So might you have to set an ultimate limit on a specific toy? Absolutely. Might you have to cover up the sand tray because he chose after three times to continue to spit in the sand? And might he choose not to have access to the sand tray for the rest of that session? Yes. If he's throwing blocks across the room, might he choose not to have blocks for the rest of that session? Yes. Whatever he puts in his mouth, might he choose not to have access to that for the rest of the play session? Yes. But the limits are only needed when they're needed, and they are isolated events. So he may end up choosing to not have a lot of things for his playtime, but he's able to stay in the playroom because that's where therapy takes place. So we don't ever want to try to take a child out of the environment, because how is the child going to learn to practice self-control? How is the child going to learn to practice complying with limits? How is the child going to learn to practice self-regulation if we just whisk them away from the environment where they're having a difficult time doing those very things? The best thing for a child in that scenario is to stay in the environment that's the most difficult for them so they can learn what it feels like, so they can practice it. So how would we set limits in that kind of scenario? You are really throwing blocks all over the room, but the blocks are not for throwing because I could get hurt, or because they can leave marks on the walls, or because it could break the miniatures, whatever you need to set the limit on. So is it your safety? Is it the walls? Is it the whatever they're throwing themselves could break? That's the neutral limit, right? A is not for B, or X is for Y. So you're really throwing those blocks hard, but the blocks aren't for throwing because I could get hurt, or whatever the scenario is. You can choose to throw the blocks at the floor if you have carpet or some kind of flooring that can handle blocks being chucked at it. I'm throwing out hypotheticals. You have to make it work for your space. You can choose to throw the blocks at the floor, or you can choose to throw the stuffed animals as hard as you choose. Which do you choose? So is it, I really need to throw the blocks? Then throwing it at the floor would be the appropriate alternative. Is it that I really need to throw something as hard as I possibly can? Then stuffed animals would make sense for that need. So we try to give alternatives that map back to the need or desire for the child. Okay, so spitting in the sand. Oh, you're spitting in the sand, but the sand isn't for spitting in because other kids use that. You can choose to spit in the garbage can, or you can choose to play in the sand without spitting in it. Which do you choose? Again, is the need to spit, or is the need to play in the sand and he's just really dysregulated? So depending on the circumstance, we would offer an appropriate alternative. So that is how we set limits. Be mindful that each one is separate and we can't string them together in our heads, because then it feels like the kid is just bucking every potential limit in the playroom, and we don't want to have that impression because that can skew our approach to unconditional acceptance and permissiveness and safety and all the things that we have been talking through. So, Sarah, thank you so much for the email. Thank you for the questions. I hope that all of you found that helpful. And this is something that we are constantly trying to work on, right? What do we do in different situations? How do we handle doing this professionally? That's always the goal. I want to read one final thing that Sarah wrote in the email, because I think this just kind of sums up the whole child-centered model. Your podcasts have literally changed my practice. I've always been interested in play therapy, but leaned more towards Adlerian. However, I was finding that put me in charge too much. In the beginning of the year, I was trying to get kids to sit and do directive worksheets and projects and bribe them with candy to cooperate. It was completely ineffective. I've seen the benefits of CCPT in even just a few sessions with my other clients. Thank you so much for putting all this out there. That's why we do what we do, y'all, because we trust that kids are going to figure it out for themselves. And we don't need to bribe them. We don't need to negotiate with them. We don't need to try to make them do something. They'll sort it out for themselves. And that's the beauty of CCPT. So, all right, y'all, love you. Thanks for spending time with me this week. Have a lovely weekend. We'll talk again soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.